Jake Cooper came back to haunt Reading by netting the only goal of a tight championship affair between the Royals and Millwall on Saturday, making it two defeats on the bounce for Paul Ince. Welcome to the Tarleton Podcast, episode 292. I'm your host, Mark Mayo. Joining me for this week's show after that 1-0 defeat to Millwall is Ben Thomas, view from the Dolan. Was it a very entertaining view from the Dolan this week, or perhaps not so much?
Not really, Mark. I mean, there was a couple of funny instances. Someone chucked a jelly baby after Millwall scored, which was quite amusing. But yeah, apart from that, very, very barren, very cold, and very desolate Dolan, unfortunately.
You know what? It was a proper cold weekend, wasn't it? I think it's Sunday. It looked really nice. And then it was just freezing cold outside. I went to Watford Arsenal, funnily enough, just as a little aside. And yeah, really nice looking day, really sunny, freezing cold, which it probably just about sums up how we're feeling as Reading fans at the moment, that kind of barren feeling that we're having to endure. But perhaps maybe, you know, this might not be the most pessimistic of podcasts. The beauty of recording on a Monday night as we're doing it now is that perhaps there are some green shoots of recovery sprouting up in our mind that maybe wouldn't have appeared if we'd have done an Arsenal fan TV kind of Saturday night show immediately after the game. So we'll get into the recap then. We've just got the one game to talk about in a little bit. Bit of mailbag to go through as well, and some news bites with a new contract for a footballer handed out this week for an existing player. We'll get into that, and then big match preview later on into the show. So before the recap, big thank you as always to our Patreon subscribers and ZCZ Films, our sponsors. Right then, let's do some recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, Ben, one of the things that I think is pretty obvious that's going to have to be key for Paul Ince's Reading coming out of any relegation fears in the next few weeks is Fortress Medeski, that home field advantage that we've just not had at any time this season. I mean, we didn't really have it last season, but there weren't any fans, so I don't blame them as much, but get in the Medeski Stadium, or should it be the Fortress Select Car Leasing now, getting that kind of home field advantage behind Reading, picking up these sorts of wins against teams, mid-table championship, maybe, you know, we'll probably think they're looking for playoffs, but it's the sort of game that at home you like to be able to win, and ultimately Reading just couldn't get it done.
No, exactly. And I said straight after the game that it was very frustrating. It was a game that we didn't deserve to win based on how we played, but it was a game that we needed to win 100%. You know, given the position we're in, given the results in previous weeks of the teams kind of, well, below us really, not even around us, but below us. And it was a really good opportunity to, you know, to beat a fairly, say, attritional, but, you know, solid yet unspectacular Millwall side, and it would have given everyone a huge lift. You know, winning that game, second home game in a row that we would have won, and we couldn't get it done. And you know, my overriding feeling from the game and still is now is just frustration, because for all our kind of attacking wealth on the pitch and on the bench, we just couldn't unlock the defence, and it's more of a kind of you know, from an aesthetic point of view, basically forgotten what happened in the game, because it was incredibly tedious in spells, very, very uneventful from both teams. But the ramifications over the next sort of four or five, you know, potentially six games of the Millwall game could be huge. You know, the fixture list is not kind over the next sort of three or four games. Forest away, Bournemouth away, you know, Blackburn home, and then I think after the international break, it's Barnsley away. And they're really difficult games. That is not an easy set of fixtures. So this was a really, really good opportunity to get 3 points on the board, and we couldn't do it. And what's more frustrating is that when we went a goal down, which proved to be their only real attack of the game, we didn't have any kind of impetus going forward or any real sense of trying to penetrate their defence. You know, it got to the stage, I think it was around 55 minutes, where they had two defenders on a yellow card, and you just think, well, let's commit players forward, let's change it up a little bit. I know we're going to talk about substitutions in a little bit anyway, but it just the overriding sense was just sheer frustration, the fact that it was a game that with all due respect to Millwall, we would have looked at that and said we have to get 3 points out of this game. And that's been the case, you know, all the way through the season at the select. So it's becoming very, very difficult to see that we will have enough ourselves to get out of this problem at the moment and this situation in terms of league position. It may well be that other teams let us off the hook by, you know, to be blunt, being so bad and not picking up points themselves. But we have to start taking some responsibility, and, you know, the players on the pitch, regardless of who the manager in the dugout is, need to show a little bit more kind of nous and kind of game management to be able to get points on the board out of these games that we're playing at the moment.
Yeah, I think I'll get onto my kind of positive takes on it in a little bit, but the real disappointment out of this game, I think, was just that lack of momentum at the end. We've had, over the years, so many teams, you think of Brian McDermott's team in 11-12, that were just, even if they'd had a not brilliant game in the last 10 minutes, they'd get an equaliser, get a winner or something like that, and just, you know, pick up points late on. And I think it's the sign of a good team that does that, and it's a sign of a really bad team that loses points late on, as we did earlier in the season. That's kind of stopped now because we don't really get in positions to lose them anymore. But the lack of momentum in getting that equaliser, was this maybe a fitness issue? Was it down to Paul Ince making subs after the 79th, 85th and then the 92nd minute? That's not, you know, if you want to change a game, particularly when you're 1-0 down at home, you think at least maybe 65, 70 minutes. We have got a relatively decent bench for a championship team. Yaku Mate, the winger Barker, who we've not really seen much of, Deli Bashiru, you know, even someone like Jamari Clark can make a difference off the bench. So the options are now there for Reading. We couldn't say that much earlier in the season. But when it came to this game, did what for you changed from minute 65 to minute 85? Because it didn't really feel like anything changed.
No, I mean, we were just going through the motions, really. I think you're right with the bench. There were so many opportunities there to kind of mix it up. And, you know, obviously Ajaro's been out for a very, very long time. But when he came on and he had the ball for those fleeting moments, he did look quite sharp. He did look like he was up for it. Same with Mate, although, again, it's another issue there because he's kind of playing in a role that he's not familiar with. We all know that he is better on the wings, on the right wing. That's where he's had his most successful period for our club, but still persists on sticking him up front and kind of playing him as a striker, or certainly since Ince has come in, that's what his mindset's been with Mate. So it's very, very difficult to not criticise Paul Ince here. You know, I hear people that say we've got to give him time and we've got to be a little bit more positive, but you know, anyone in that stadium, and it is very, very easy as football fans. I was not working, chuck someone else on or change the system or change the formation. But that was a game that was crying out for me for sticking two up top. You know, Clark would have been okay in that role. Give him a go up there. You know, Ajaria to kind of to push out on the wings a little bit and stretch the defence a little bit more to find spaces in the middle. Same with Mate on the right hand side, and it didn't happen. And we had this bizarre situation with sort of 3 or 4 minutes to go. I can't remember the exact time in the sub, where Scott Dann comes on and he's lobbed up front. And you think, well, if I'm Jamari Clark and I'm sat on the bench, I'm in my head, I'm screaming at the manager and saying, stick me on. But, you know, I'm a striker. That's what I do. That's what I'm supposed to do. And he's put Scott Dann on, as you know, lumped him forward to try and get something out of the game. And by then, it's too late. You know, all the impetus, or what little impetus we had at that point, had completely gone. And the players, to my mind, seemed resigned to lose the game. So it was a little bit odd. And I'm all for giving Paul Ince the time and you know, him coming in a very difficult situation. But we can't get away from the fact that he made some big errors on Saturday. Whether or not, you know, if he brought players on that would have affected the game, who's to say? Don't know. But at least give them the opportunity to try and change the course of the game and to try and change the shape of the way Millwall were playing, because they, you know, they just sat in a defensive block and just gobbled everything up. You know, clear the ball, hoof it away, ball comes back, gobble it up again. Just defensively very, very solid. And we just didn't test them in any shape or form throughout the 90 minutes at all.
Well, I would have to say that Millwall, only three teams have conceded fewer goals than Millwall all season in the Championship. So ultimately, we do have to say, to a certain extent, they are a good team. Whether they're the sort of team that that's what I mean about the momentum. If maybe it would have happened, John Swift had a good chance in the first half that was a really good position that he went off target. Maybe if in the last couple of minutes we'd have had a couple of really good chances, forced a good save or good block or whatever, then probably would have come away saying, you know, it's not as bad as it is. But those sort of moments just didn't happen late on. And that's always one of the things that really frustrates me about being behind in a game. I mean, sending Scott Dan on for the last 2 minutes, that is so old school, isn't it? If you didn't have Paul Ince as manager, you'd think you had someone like him to send the centre-back on for the last 2 minutes. That's a proper Christophe Samba Blackburn era sort of stuff, isn't it, that he's pulling out there. Let's do the goal then. Obviously, Jake Cooper, ex-Reading player. To an extent, I suppose it kind of sums up, we've let so many pretty decent players go too early. We obviously let Jake Cooper go at a time when we were in the playoffs and bought in Thiago Ilori for £3.5 million. Thought we were doing a really smart acquisition. Ultimately, I suppose looking long term probably wasn't. Obviously, even looking short term, we didn't go up, so it wasn't really that important. So it's really annoying with Jake Cooper. And I was actually looking back at the centre backs we've signed since he left, and we haven't actually paid any money for any of them. So it's not as if we've even squandered money on centre-backs. We just haven't really had many of them. And, you know, Jake Cooper could so easily still be playing for Reading and doing that sort of stuff. For the goal itself, obviously, a set piece. I think it is our 20th set piece goal we've conceded this season. And to be brutally honest, it was actually one of the better ones we've conceded, because Tom McIntyre does lose him, yes, but it's a good ball in. Jake Cooper's about 6'4", 6'5". It's a good ball in. It's a good header. Keeper's not going to get near it. Actually, I'm going to cut them a bit of slack that it probably, you know, relatively speaking, we've conceded some much worse set piece goals this year.
We have, but it unfortunately those problems stick, don't they? And you know, what do you say, 20th goal that we've conceded from set piece? I mean, there's clearly a massive issue with how we're defending the set pieces. I think, you know, for me, when Holmes loses his man, on reflection, there's about three players around Cooper in the end, which tells you all you need to know about the system, because you think, well, who are the other two marking at that point? So, you know, it was a good header, and you know, with Jake Cooper, you know, his height is one of his biggest assets, and it was, you know, for a headed goal, it was a really good finish. It's just, again, it just comes back to that word of being frustrated with the fact that, you know, time and again, we can see it in the stands. People can see it sort of around stadium in terms of what they're not doing defensively, and they're still not doing it. It just comes back to that thing I've said repeatedly this season about leadership, about players taking responsibility. And, you know, you can lose your man. Of course you can. It happens in games. But for us to repeatedly do that over the course of the season, just losing players and giving away soft goals, because in reality, it was a soft goal. You know, it was a good finish, of course it was, but they're still not doing what they need to do in those situations of clearing the ball, marking the players and doing the absolute basics to try and get something out of a football game. So, you know, I've always been a big fan of Jake Cooper. I think it's from his point of view, the stick and power to be able to stay at a club, you know, like Millwall. I think he was captain at the game as well. And to score, you know, against the team that gave him an opportunity will always be special, I guess. But symptom of a bigger problem in terms of our game management, but also recruitment, as you said, you know, previously about getting rid of players and then not getting quality in, or thinking we're getting quality in because we're paying money for it, when actually, I've no doubt in my mind that Jake Cooper could still be playing for us. You know, he could have gone on to be very, very high appearance maker. Same to some extent with Alex Pearce, who was on the bench for Millwall as well. So, It's just where we are and where we have been over the last sort of 4, 5, 6 years, really, in terms of retainment and recruitment, but bringing players in. And that's something that needs to be looked at long term, obviously. Coming into the summer, you know, in a very, very difficult period, as we all know, with the contracts coming up for most of the playing squad. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how we start to correct some of these things. You know, the same could be said for Jack Stacey, who was kind of in and around the team at the same time, wasn't he? And he's gone on to have a fairly decent career to boot. So there's a number of players that are coming back to haunt us at the moment. And it's sadly, it's becoming all too regular and not much of a surprise these days.
No, it isn't a surprise. That's a good way of putting it, really. I mean, final point on the game I will make is, I suppose, the one thing we've been asking Paul Ince to do is to fix the defence. In your opinion, were there signs of that? I mean, we actually outshot them 11 shots to 7, not a huge amount tally, obviously. And, you know, they spent the last half an hour or so pretty comfortable sitting back. But, well, can you tell me the last time we did outshoot a team, had more shots?
I can't. Is that a trivia question? And do you know the answer?
It's not a quick question. It has happened.
The last time we outshot a team, was it this calendar year or last calendar year?
It was this calendar year, yeah. We did lose the game. I probably haven't really spoiled that in that sense.
Well, we lose most games, don't we? I don't know. Go on, tell me.
It's Bristol City on February the 9th. So it's been a while. I mean, we also outshot QPR and we lost 4-0 to them. So maybe it doesn't really mean anything. But perhaps on this occasion.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, I mean, was the defence, generally speaking, a bit more fixed?
Ironically, they were more solid. But the problem with that is that, you know, and it's wrong to kind of compare McIntyre to Bubba Rahman, who obviously, you know, technically replaced in the lineup and the formation. But, I mean, you know, they were defensively solid as a unit, but that meant that Yeardom and McIntyre didn't really get forward. And, you know, the games where we've done quite well, Yeardom has tended to get forward a little bit more. So what do you sacrifice? Defensive solidity for kind of attack-minded presence. But then, you know, we still lost the game. So it's very, very difficult to sit and go, oh, well, the defence is better when we still lose. I suppose in previous games, it might have been one of those situations where we end up, you know, conceding over two or three on top of that. We didn't really look like doing that. But was that because Millwall weren't brilliant, you know, moving forward? Or was it because they came with a game plan to just kind of sit behind the ball and absorb the pressure? Don't know. If we'd won the game and it was 1-0 to us or 2-0 or whatever, then you'd say, yeah, the defence is brilliant and we're moving in the right direction. But the point is that we still lost the game. And, you know, unless we're really clutching at straws sort of towards the later end of the business end of the season, it doesn't really matter at the moment how many you lose by, because you still lose the game, you're not getting the points on the board. So it becomes difficult to laud the success of defence too much when, you know, as we said, they've conceded from another set piece and we don't have any points on the board to kind of show for the game. Now, if we go away at Forest and we end up with a, you know, 0-0 or whatever, defence has worked brilliantly and that's happy days and that's a great point. But I just can't see that happen at the moment because we've kind of almost sacrificed the kind of the attack-minded presence that we had, you know, maybe against Coventry, I guess potentially Huddersfield at home as well, for a defence that is looking more solid but has still conceded the one goal and lost the game.
Yeah, I think Paul Lynch said before the game that he didn't want another Huddersfield. I think I was right in reading that. And I mean, he didn't get it. So in that sense, I guess he's successful. But obviously, yeah, it is about whether these are baby steps or a dreadful sign of what's to come. It's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Paul Lynch didn't actually speak to the Reading FC media after the game. Michael Jilks did, the assistant interim first-team coach. So we'll hear from Michael Jilks and then we'll go into the mailbag.
We're at home, so we try and win all our home games as we try and win every game. Very disappointed with the result. Not much in the game today. Not much in the game at all. But, we're extremely disappointed. Performance was very positive. Very pleased with that. But obviously the result's the one thing that matters at the day. We knew what we were dealing with today. They had 7 opportunities and 6 were set pieces. They had 2 corners and scored from 1. The other one on target was the one that got the corner. So we knew how good they were and that's how they got their goal.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Mateo starting us off this week saying, can you do a comprehensive explanation of what substitutions are for Mr. Ince, please? Which, yeah, we've got into it. So it's probably not something I'd get into too much again. But really, I think on the topic of general game management, it was a bit suspect against Birmingham. Blackpool... I mean, the problem was with the Blackpool game is that we got caught on the break twice when we were 2-1 down. And I suppose that isn't really something we should be angry about, because at least we were trying to score. Yeah, it is a bit of an old cliche saying it doesn't matter if you lose 2-0 or 3-0 as long as you're trying to get it back, and I guess we were. And Millwall, you know, we've talked about the substitutions. I suppose it just boils down to a sense of what is the plan in these last 10 minutes, 20 minutes? So, because we've talked about getting the defence right, and if Ince can do that over the next couple of weeks, then brilliant. But it's not just about getting the defence right, and I was expecting a lot because that's probably the only thing we were asking for last week. But, you know, he does have to come up with an attacking plan. And when the game's a bit more free and open and everything, it probably is a bit easier just to say, give it to Swift and Zhao and they'll do their bit. But with 20 minutes to go, teams sitting in, particularly, you know, if we're 1-0 down at Forest on the weekend, they'll have the fans behind them, defence will be nice and organised, good team. We do need to come up with a plan for those last sort of 20-minute comebacks. And this team, obviously, Ince hasn't been here that long, but under Paunovic, this team just never seemed capable of doing it either, did it?
No, not at all. And it, you know, I think we've said time and again, it's to do with mentality, I think. You know, that is a very damaged squad in terms of performances, you know, not just this season, but probably still a hangover of the collapse of last season, really, in terms of being in the playoffs and then not. And generally just, you know, without going into too much detail, but just the malaise at the club and the kind of the way that standards have progressively slipped both on and off the pitch. It just seemed bizarre to me. It really did, that you've got Mate and you've got Ajara and you've got, you know, Clark on the bench, and you know, at the moment, competition winner in Brandon Barkley doesn't seem to be really any closer to doing anything with Reading Football Club at the moment. But, you know, it just didn't make sense to me. I think you made the point about the 55th or 65th minute. You know, at that point, you chuck them on, you've got a good sort of 40, 30 minutes to be able to kind of get back into the game and show a bit more willing, at least get the fans on side, you know, show a little bit of willing to try and take the game to Millwall. But there was none of that. And I don't know what Ince in the dugout and his kind of coach himself saw that left it so late to make subs. You know, if he was really happy with the way things were going and he was confident, then why make any subs at all the last 5 minutes of the game? Because nothing was really going to change at that point. So it was very bizarre. And I get Matt's point about, you know, can we let him know what a substitution is? But it just seemed very, very odd that, you know, Paunovic was criticised heavily for his, you know, incorrect subs or lack of subs or wrong timing or whatever. And yet we've got another bizarre situation where anyone in the stadium would have made sort of a double, maybe even a triple sub, you know, well into the second half and given those players time to be able to affect the course of the game. So it's all very odd on Saturday.
You know what, I'm just before to the final point on the substitutions, we're saying about what minutes make a change. I've got in front of me the absolute definitive handbook on when to make a substitution, and that is Adam Lafondra's record from 2012 with the run-in for that season. And he tends to be brought on about 75th, 65th, 68th minute. He played about an average of 22 minutes off the bench for about 7 games in about spring period of 2012. And that is the Reading FC textbook on when to bring in a substitute. And it quite clearly says between the 65th and 70th minute for your impactful sub. So that's your lesson, Paul Ince. That's what
like that's Adam Lafondre there, isn't it? Like that's him of his caliber, and in that season you were talking about, it was just ridiculous, and you knew when he was going to come on that he was going to score. We haven't had that for years, really, in terms of players. So yeah, I mean that's a pretty good stat, actually. Didn't he win? He won the Player of the Month as well for that, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he won it in January in the Premier League year, having been subbed on like all the time, basically. I don't have those. I can get those stats, but I don't think maybe that is what people listen to this podcast for, is for memories of Adam Lafondre coming off the bench and what time it was and everything like that. But yeah, I think you are right. It is the calibre of the player, but that was the game plan, wasn't it? It was that we'd have Roberts and Hunt up front, and you know they would go as hard as they could for 70 minutes, fully aware that probably one of them, because I mean Roberts was a bit older and Hunt could probably run all day, but they were fully aware that they would get subbed off on 70 minutes, and therefore they could go harder for those 70 minutes. They didn't have to drag it out. If you're a manager and you actually just set out these tactics and you have these tactics, then things are more likely to click into place than perhaps just saying, oh, well, you know, you've got to do it for a whole 90. You know, you're never going to come off and you don't have to worry about coming off and up your game or anything like that. That's maybe it does impact a player's mentality. I don't know. I'm not a championship level footballer, sadly. We'll have to, we've had Lafondo on the show before, actually. So maybe people can go listen back to that to hear the secrets of the success.
We need to get Jason Roberts on and talk to him about it, don't we, really? Let's get Jason Roberts on and,
That's in the archives. There's a Jason Roberts interview in the archives that Ollie did back in the day. But sadly, I think, the archives are deep for Tyler Sten. It's just maybe people have only been listening to us for a couple of years, not had an access to them. We'll definitely get them out. I was actually thinking 300th episode comes up at the end of the season. Before that, we'll dig into the archives and bring out some social media alerts for people who are maybe not familiar with our backlog of good interviews. So definitely dig into those. Ben Brenton says, our question, bit of a throwback, but can we just breathe a sigh of relief that Anton Zingarevich didn't last long as our chairman? We would be financially screwed if we were being funded by Russian money right now. Moving on from that very swiftly before before I make a bad joke, basically. Manfred's a clown saying, do you think Tom Ince being dragged, his name in the dirt, that is warranted, or just because it's easy to get on him because his dad is the manager? I did see a few tweets of people getting fed up with the fact that Tom Ince was kept on, the substitutions coming back into the show again. And just generally speaking, I mean, it's a bit, I'm not a fan of the kind of, oh, Tom Ince being his son sort of stuff. But maybe if Tom Ince had been at the club for like a decade and was, you know, big dog and all that sort of stuff, and then it had happened, I'd probably get onto it. But Tom Ince has only been at the club about 2 weeks, longer than Paul Ince. I don't think his persuasion techniques are good enough to have brought in his dad as manager that quickly.
No, there was, I think it was a tweet from a Blackpool fan or some comment saying that Tom had done more for Paul Ince's managerial career than Paul Ince himself. So there's a lot of different views out there. I think it's always awkward, isn't it, when that happens, you know, there's family members involved. I mean, my views on Tom Ince, I mean, he's had some good games, he's had some not so good games, but that's most of the squad, really. I think it's become very easy, you know, our fan base is I suppose, being guilty of scapegoating a lot of players. You know, we had Puskas at the start of the year and then he went and then everyone was gutted and is now celebrating all the goals he's scoring for Pisa. You know, Danny Drinkwater has had it, but largely think that's to do with his profile.
Liam Moore as well.
Yeah, Liam Moore, you know, so it's just the mindset of the fans at the moment and where we're at. I mean, was Tom Ince worse than, let's say, my favourite junior Hoyler? Not really, you know, but people like Hoylett, so they're not going to get on his back. You know, Tom Ince is the newbie, his dad's the manager. A lot of people aren't hugely pleased with Paul Ince being there, so it just goes around in cycles, really. Do I think he should have come off? Yeah, but then there was sort of three or four players that probably should have come off earlier, as we've said repeatedly in this pod. So it is tricky, and I think we just need to separate sometimes the kind of relationship that Tom has with his dad. I don't think that plays any part in it, really. I'd like to think it doesn't play any part in it. Maybe that's me being naive, but yeah, it's probably more awkward for Tom than it is for anyone else at that club at the moment, having his dad there, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think at Blackpool, it was like almost basically well known that he was brought in to kind of keep Tom Ince around. But obviously, that's not the case now. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Also, I did notice that guy's Twitter name is Manfred's a clown. It's glad to get some Major League Baseball references in the podcast. I've been waiting ages to get that sort of stuff in. And it means, Ben, I can ask you for your take on the lockdown or lockout negotiations. Are you in favour of introducing a pitch clock or banning the shift in baseball this year?
I would say pitch clock. I think there's a couple of years or quite a few years ago when the NFL had a lockout, and I was quite like it when the players, you know, regardless of team, joined together and just kind of fight for their right to party, basically. So I'm not hugely up with the politics of baseball at the moment. Although go Twins, Minnesota Twins are my team. But yeah, I'm always quite keen to see what happens when baseball players and any players kind of join together and effectively go on strike. It's always quite amusing, really.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're in Red Sox country here, though, pal. That's not gonna fly around here. But yeah, no, it's actually, you say you don't keep up with baseball politics. I kind of do follow baseball, and the politics of this lockout have been absolutely tedious, absolutely terrible things to follow, and I can't stand it, and I can't wait for the sport to actually begin again. Thank God football doesn't go on these. You know, I do agree with you. It's good to see the players kind of band together, but at the same point, I'm really glad that football doesn't cancel games for these kind of lockouts and stuff. Final question then, if anyone has any more baseball questions, you know, maybe we can make the least popular section of a championship football podcast there is. Tom is disappointed saying, did other Reading fans feel, as he did, that we've improved hugely at the back in the Millwall game? And is anyone else frustrated by the relentless negativity of some in our fan base and feel that Ince needs backing? Tom is disappointed. I presume that's not Tom Ince on his secret Twitter account sending us in a message there. And the thing I would say is we've just spoken about our views on the kind of the Tom Ince stuff does kind of reflect on the fan base negativity. And it's totally understandable to be negative at the moment. Although as I've tried to say a couple of times in this podcast, trying to get out a bit of, you know, green shoots of progress in this game is something I'm kind of keen to do. But the thing about Ince needing backing, I would say that the fundamental thing about that is that Paul Ince isn't going to read social media. Not that I'm condoning being harsh on him on social media, but he's not that sort of guy, I believe, or he shouldn't be. And that in the stadium, Reading fans, you know, even at the Peterborough game, which was in the dog days, which I was at, was really good atmosphere among the fans for pretty much all the game. And at the Millwall game, again, you've got a full club, 1871, fully back in the team and everything. I think that is the thing that matters the most. And I think the fans are, generally speaking, doing a really good job of staying behind a team that, you know, maybe other fan bases would have abandoned quite some time ago.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've had nothing to cheer about, really. You know, that's why we've clung on to every victory like it's, you know, qualification for the Champions League or whatever. It's been a very, very difficult season, and it's been a very difficult period in this club's history. I feel like the people that are choosing to attend games at the moment are great, you know, and I thought the atmosphere was a little bit muted on Saturday, maybe because it was absolutely freezing. I don't know, maybe because people have just had enough now. I'm not sure, but you know, from my point of view, people that are still choosing to go to games home and away, the atmosphere has been great. You know, the people have got their opinions and they're entitled to kind of share those in, without sounding boring, but a legal way, without hurting anybody in the process. But yeah, I all of the negativity for me has come on social media and the kind of the backbiting and the sniping and everything else. And that's, whether we like it or not, that is the currency in not just football, but in modern sport and in the modern world. You know, but I do feel that people that have attended games, the games that I've been to home and away this year, that the crowd have been great. You know, the Reading fans have been fantastic. And there's still, you know, there's still a group of fans that are keeping morale going. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening within the fan base and kind of schemes and things that are going on. So it's just been a very, very difficult season. And it's hard to get excited about, you know, Paul Ince as an interim manager. You know, he is old school. He I met him last week before, and he has got an aura about him. He really has. You know, you don't want to mess around with him, really. And that will be reflected in the way that he sees the game and kind of the modern era of football. So, you know, he was no nonsense when he was playing. I'm sure he's no nonsense as a manager now. But we can keep going back to the fundamental point. It doesn't matter who's in the dugout. We've just got to win games to stay in this league. You know, if we were starting next season in the Championship and we appointed Paul Ince, I think there'd be quite a few more people that are a little bit, you know, upset by that, really. But, you know, we're not at that stage yet. We've got to stay in the league. He's the manager at the moment. It is what it is, to coin my favourite Pownoe phrase of all time. We've just got to keep going and just try and pick up points where we can.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add to that is that I think fans, come the summer, hopefully in the Championship, or probably either way, just would like to see a big old change around the club. Obviously, a lot of personnel is going to change, manager's going to change. And something, you know, a new manager, whether it's new director of football or whatever, comes in, new bunch of players and a plan and a very clear kind of identity and all that sort of stuff. And just something new to get behind, a fresh You know, a clean slate is probably the cliched phrase that people always ask for at the end of a season. But genuinely this time, I do actually think it's important. So hopefully that's where we're at in a few months' time. Got a little bit to go before then. Some very important games, of course. Let's go into News Bites now, talk about what's been going on around the club this week.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Let's start with Reading FC women beaten 4-0 at the leaders Arsenal in midweek. No shame in that. They had a big game against Tottenham on Sunday, which finished goalless. That means they stay sixth and still, you know, pretty much within touching distance of, I think it's Tottenham a third at the moment, Man United up there as well. Really big teams, really, maybe not as much historically in the women's game, but, you know, well-funded teams that if Reading can stay in amongst and stay competitive with for the rest of the season, it will definitely be a successful season for the Reading women's team. They've got Manchester United actually at home on Saturday at 11:30, so I believe that game is on Sky for their next game. As I say, they're sixth in the table at the moment. Onto the under 23s, they lost 4-3 to Wolves in midweek. Jamari Clark with the double in that. Then on Sunday, they drew 0-0 with Birmingham. They've got Chesham United on Wednesday away in the Barks and Bucks Cup quarterfinal. So that is, all purposes, a senior game against a non-league team at Chesham United. No reason for me to believe that you can't go to it and be in the away end and everything like that. I think a few years ago now, we were at Maidenhead and had a couple of games and stuff like that. They're going to be pretty competitive because they're, you know, senior players in that. If they play a good team, they'll be right up for playing a Reading team. And yeah, it'll be a pretty decent game. Hopefully have a few Reading fans go down to that. Under-18s lost 6-0 to West Ham, sadly, on the weekend. They've got Fulham next up on Saturday. And, well, the big news out of the club this week is that we are actually able to give out contracts to players to play football for the club on a professional, full-time basis. That is exactly what we've done with Scott Dann this week. So we're getting another 12 months of Scott Dann. I mean, I suppose on the one side, Ben, this is just a good sign that Reading are able to hand out these sort of contracts. And secondly, Scott Dann, I think he's been probably the steadiest central defender at the club this season. That's not a ringing endorsement, I'm aware, but if he can keep up his level for another year, I think he'll definitely be an asset.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's one of those players that comes with a lot of experience. Never spectacular in his absolute prime, but, you know, very solid. You know what you're going to get with Scott Dann. Probably quite a good character to have around the team as well. But what it says to me really is that they're prioritising the kind of more experienced players because they know full well, the board and whoever we're talking about with that should know that most of that team next year, regardless what league we're going to be in, is going to be very, very young. And having someone like Scott Dann around for another 12 months, whether or not he plays consistently and he can stay fit is another thing altogether. But the experience that he will hopefully give those young players off the pitch will hopefully be invaluable. And, you know, I feel like they're going to be loading their contracts towards those experienced players because they know that there's going to be a huge turnover regardless in terms of a lot of those players leaving anyway. You know, John Swift won't be staying. I'd be very surprised if any of the loanees come back again. You know, there's a number of players really that are up for grabs. You know, we've had rumours this week of Jao, you know, bids of around 10 million or so, which I'm sure the EFL will let us spend at least 10 quid of that. So, you know, it's going to become very, very difficult. And I think that the signing for me is more about what he's going to be able to give off the pitch than he is on the pitch. Now, I might be doing a disservice to him at this point in terms of his fitness levels and his kind of sticking power on the pitch, but I'm not disappointed with it. It's a realisation of where we are at as a club at the moment. And where we're probably going to be for the next two or three seasons while we get out of this kind of embargo and balance the books. So, yeah, all in all, happy with it. I mean, I'm not, you know, deliriously excited, but it's proof that we can do something and we, you know, players are choosing to stay with us. You know, I'm sure we could have got another deal somewhere else at a Championship club or potentially drop down to League One. So fair play to him for kind of sticking around and, and signed on for another 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the stats now. 16 appearances he's had this season. Roughly 43% of the starting 11s has he been included in, so not quite half. And I think that probably owes to the fact that obviously he signed, having not played for a while, so he did miss a few. He has had injury problems, but he's 35, and that's going to happen. And I think, as you say, it's not about signing Scott Dan to be the star centre-back next season. It's about signing Scott Dan to be a useful, you know, first-team player slash reserve, experienced head in the dressing room. Maybe he's a, you know, they've seen coaching potential and stuff like that in him. They're going to do a bit of a John O'Shea, and maybe he'll move, you know, behind the scenes in a couple of years or something. It's all good stuff, I think. And that's, you know, if it works out, then great. And, you know, ultimately, if he isn't great next season, then he'll be there as a backup and move on, and that's it. Probably wouldn't cost us a lot of money. So yeah, I'm happy with the deal. Maybe a sign of what's to come, but I wouldn't get my hopes up too much. Let's go on to big match preview now and talk about the game against Nottingham Forest.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Ben, I don't know what you spent your Friday nights doing, but I spent my Friday night watching the first half of Nottingham Forest play Sheffield United this weekend, and they looked quite good. Drew 1-1 in the end. They definitely should have been ahead in the first half that I watched. And Nottingham Forest are certainly, you know, in the mix for thinking about being in the playoffs and everything this year. They're ninth at the moment, just 3 points off. So they'll see this game Saturday, 3 p.m. at the City Ground as an absolute must win, beating a Reading team who aren't on much form at the moment. It's going to be difficult for us to get something.
For sure. I mean, you know, what are they, ninth in the table, 52 points, I think. So it's that three off the playoffs at the moment. So they're well in the pack. Haven't had, I think it was probably the worst start they've ever had to a league season, or one of the worst starts they've ever had under Chris Hughton. And, you know, since they've got Steve Cooper in, they haven't looked back. I think they've still got about 3,000 players on their books, but they, you know, they're utilising them a lot more now. And it was odd because, you know, I always thought Steve Cooper was quite well liked in Swansea, but, you know, when he left in the summer, or they parted ways mutually, or whatever they called it. You know, there seemed to be quite a lot of Swansea fans that were quite pleased. You know, they weren't massively happy with his style of play. But, you know, a club like Forest, they just want to win games. They want to be back in the Premier League. And they've got, you know, they put themselves into the, you know, into the mix to be able to do that this season. And full credit to them, you know, they've had some good results. Obviously beat Leicester in the cup, didn't they? Sort of 3 or 4 nil, I think it was. And they look good. You know, there's a lot of sides up there that are looking good at the moment, and they've consistently kept that form since Cooper's come in. Got some good players in that team. You know, they know how to play football and get results. So it's going to be, again, very, very difficult. And I don't, you know, just sort of talked about being negative, but I don't see us getting anything out of the game. If we come away with nil, that's a pretty good result for me. If we get a draw out of it, brilliant. But I just can't see us, based on our current form and the way that we tend to play away from home, that we get anything out of the game, really. So, you know, you then think, well, okay, on to the next game, but that's Bournemouth away. So it's why it comes back to so important that we got the win on Saturday against Millwall, and we didn't do that. Had we got that, we'd probably be a little bit more confident as a fan base and maybe even the players heading into this game on Saturday as well. But it hasn't happened, and I don't expect a positive result of any shape on Saturday at all, unfortunately.
Well, in that case, I will be delighted to tell you that we've not lost in 6 meetings with Nottingham Forest. 4 of the last 5 games have been 1-1, one of which was 0-0 going into the 93rd minute and still finished 1-1. So, you know, we've got a decent record against Forest, but it does feel like they are a bit of a better team this year. Obviously, we're a bit of a worse team this year as well. Sometimes you can kind of picture in your mind us coming away with a, you know, a shock win or something. I think I had this when we went to Middlesbrough a few weeks ago. I just couldn't see it in my mind. Obviously, that sadly proved to be true. So let's talk predictions then. For the Millwall game, Hambag was the only man to predict a defeat. So that means Westie's top on 24 points of our prediction league standings. Ollie's 22, Adam on 21 points, Handbag now on 18 points. I'm on 17, Sim 16, and Ben, you're on 14 points in last place. So I'm going to let you go first, because quite often I am going first and you aren't happy about that. So what's your prediction for Forest?
I mean, I don't think it matters now, does it? It's funny because I've done all right on the fantasy, actually, like the fantasy Premier League. I'm kind of near enough the top of the leagues I'm in, apart from obviously the overall one. But yeah, the predictions have just really messed me up this season. I honestly can't wait for the season to be over on a number of levels. I really can't. Predictions wise for this game, I mean, going for a loss score wise, I mean, I don't think it matters really, given my current league position. 3-1 Forest, will we score? No, let's go 3-0 Forest. I'm going 3-0 Forest.
Well, you say it doesn't matter, that wooden spoon. No one wants to end up with the wooden spoon, do they? And I'm only 3 points further ahead, and I let myself earlier on think there might be an outside shot of a risky run to the title. So, yeah, I'm going to go 1-0 for this one because, yeah, I know what you mean. The picture in us scoring at Forest is quite hard to do, really, and they've conceded exactly the same number of goals as Millwall have this season, which they held us off pretty easily. They've not lost in five. We have got that good run at the City Ground, but it's not enough, is it? Those sort of runs are there to be broken, I think. So really, it doesn't look good for us this weekend, but very happy to be proven wrong. Before we play, actually, Barnsley are in action twice. They've got Stoke at home on Tuesday, and then they're on the TV game against Fulham at 12:30. So we'll see what Barnsley can do, having been beaten by Derby. Peterborough also in action. They're away to Bournemouth on Tuesday. So a couple of things to look at, really. But I mean, ultimately, if Peterborough or Barnsley catch us, then we've done so badly, we're just going to go down anyway. So it is a little bit immaterial, because Derby will have caught us probably before either of those two teams. But, you know, there we go. We go into this game with a game up on Derby. We've got 11 games to go. We've got 5 points, albeit with a worse goal difference on Derby. It does. I occasionally have been telling myself, oh, we want to kind of say that we're going to stay up. If we'd have not had the points deduction, maybe we'll be 5 points away from Hull or whatever. And therefore, we could say that it was the points deduction that put us in this position, not our own team or something. But I mean, ultimately, when it just boils down to it, it's like you said earlier, the performances and saying we might make improvements here or there, it is just the results now. It is really just getting to that stage where we just need to pick up points, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we can blame the points deduction, but it doesn't make any difference now. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we reached that point where if we had those 6 points, we'd be in the same position anyway. And it's about taking responsibility. It's about taking responsibility off the pitch. It's about taking responsibility on the pitch. You know, it's no one's fault but our own, really. I'm glad that, on the whole, the fan base see that. I'm glad that on the whole, the club haven't, you know, gone down the Barnsley route of blaming other teams for their you know, predicament. So we just have to win games. And I think realistically, the first sensible opportunity that we're going to have is going to be sort of early April when we go to Barnsley. The next one of fixtures, obviously Forest away, Bournemouth away and Blackburn at home. Very, very difficult games. And quite feasibly, when it comes around to that early April game, you know, we may well be in the bottom three. We'll see. I just hope that the players sort of continue to recognise, or start to recognise rather, that, you know, getting relegated is a real possibility. And it's disappointing because obviously after the Birmingham game, we're all looking sort of a bit happier, and teams around us were losing, and we were kind of looking pretty. We had a bit of a cushion, but just shows you in this league how quickly that cushion can go based on results and what you do on the pitch. So fingers crossed we can try and get something at least out of the next block of games.
Well, as always, a pleasure for coming on there, mate. Thank you very much for being with us this week.
No problem at all, Mark. Have a good week, everybody, and take care.
Well, let's end on a positive note, I think. Let's end on, as we were just saying, how difficult it's going to be to get a point or get a win at Forest. Just think of how brilliant it will taste when Paul Ince walks up to that away end after 90 minutes at the City Ground, getting a hero's welcome from those hardy souls that have travelled up to the East Midlands on Saturday. We've got a full week of training ahead of ourselves. did make some improvements for the Millwall game, perhaps. So let's see if we can make some more for the Forest game and get a statement of intent victory behind us. Let's end on that positive message. And as always, thank you for listening to Tarleton Podcast. We'll be back next week after that Forest game. I'm probably not going to be with you for a couple of weeks because I'm on away. So hopefully we'll be back, as I say, after that Forest game. And then, yeah, some big old games coming up for Reading, some tough games. But this is the Championship. If you're gonna make some waves in the Championship, you need to win some big games. Let's hope Reading start with that this weekend. Come on, your ass.
You smile.